Monday and yesterday with Dr. Elton Trueblood at Shakertown, which is soon to become a national monument. If you haven't visited that area, it's only about 7 miles from Wilmore. I would urge you to do so. Dr. Trueblood was asked, what makes a great seminary? And he said two things by way of reply: a perfect balance between mind and heart, a clear head and a warm heart. And we've been talking about that this morning. And a strong center of commitment to which you have agreed. And then he quoted Archimedes, "If you give me a place to stand, I can lift the whole world." We're happy to say that Asbury Theological Seminary has a place to stand. We're a confessional seminary, and we want you to be aware of that. And we hope that you will share the commitment of the seminary, if you don't already do so, as a result of your experience with us. We've asked Dr. John Oswalt, who is Assistant Professor of Biblical Languages and Literature, to speak to us this morning on the doctrinal distinctives of the seminary. You may take your time, Dr. Oswalt.
We live in a world where the term identity crisis has become a cliché. The complexity of individuals and institutions is ever being brought home to us with more and more force. Thus, we ask, who am I? Who is the real me? What is the true nature of that institution? What is it really about? This morning, I would like to talk with you about the identity of Asbury Theological Seminary as I perceive it. To do so, I want to draw some parallels from the life and experience of the Apostle Paul. This man, Paul, suffered an identity crisis, if there ever was one. On that road to Damascus, his whole perception of himself and his place in the world was altered. In its place came a concept of himself that grew ever more and more pointed, ever more and more single, ever more and more unified, until at last he could shout in triumph, "This one thing I do." Paul did not come to this unity of selfhood primarily by introspection and self-analysis. Surely these were significant during the years in Arabia, but much more significant was the fact that Paul had gained a totally new field of reference in which to place himself. Against the background of a truth and a personality of whose total and ultimate reality he was convinced, he was able to perceive himself correctly and to discover the meaning of his existence. Paul found himself through commitment. The identity crisis through which so many are going today is at heart a crisis of commitment. Until we find that perspective of truth against which to view ourselves, to which we may commit ourselves, we can never find ourselves. Jesus' words, "If a man would save his life, he will lose it. But if a man lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, he will surely find it." Those words have never appeared more true than they do today. For it is only in the context of unreserved commitment to God and his cause that we are finally able to see ourselves as we are. If I were to imply to you today that Asbury Theological Seminary has no identity problems, I would be untruthful. Certainly all of us who make up the seminary, and from today that includes you, all of us are engaged in continuing discussion in an attempt to better define and refine who we are and what we are about. But that continuing discussion aside, The basic character of Asbury is abundantly clear. It is so because Asbury and those of us who are Asbury are committed. We make no apology for this. Indeed, we glory in it, for that commitment shows us who we are. This commitment is not merely a search for truth. In reality, that commitment is no commitment at all. For in the realm of values, it is a declaration of freedom, a refusal to be bound by any view of reality but one's own. No, Asbury, like Paul, is committed to a particular vision of the truth, a vision embodied in the person of Jesus Christ, a vision not discovered but revealed. Does this mean that our task is only transmission and never discovery? In part, yes. For we are not so foolish as to believe that all who have gone before us were dolts and that we, of all earth's sons, are the first to lay hold of the truth. No, we know that many whose bodies have long since disintegrated into dust penetrated far deeper into the light than we will ever be capable of. And so, humbly, we trace their footsteps. But in another sense, no, our task is not merely transmission. For who has yet plumbed the depths, or ascended to the heights, or measured the circumference of all that God is and designs for us? Ah, no. Within the bounds of God's revealed truth, there is room for discovery to the end of the age and beyond, until that day when we know as we are known. But just what is it to which Asbury is committed? What is this vision which compels us and defines us and circumscribes all our efforts? I believe it is the same as Paul's. It is the one thing which he did and which we attempt to do. As he describes it, it has three facets. He says, I am willing to lose everything if I may know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings. As these three phrases summed up the vision of reality which shaped Paul and his identity, so I believe they shape Asbury. First of all, we seek to know him. This desire grows out of the profound conviction that it is possible to know God. We believe that knowledge of God is an intellectual possibility, not because of the capacity of man's mind to bridge the gulf of the infinite or to force the unknowable into the mold of cognition, but because the infinite, unknowable God has disclosed himself. This self-disclosure has been in our own theater, the theater of space and time, in our own thought patterns, and finally, in our own form. For we believe that in Jesus Christ, we have a full and adequate revelation of God. Yes, were it possible to take a picture of that space where God is, we believe that when the film was developed, on its surface would appear the face of Jesus Christ. He is the visible picture of the invisible God. He was very God of very God, yet very man of very man. But some perceptive soul here is saying, how do we know Jesus? On what authority can we describe him? On what authority can we say we know his nature, his character? On the authority of the Scriptures. Yes, we believe in the deity of Christ because we believe in the authority of Scripture. We believe that the record of Jesus' life and death and resurrection as contained in the Bible is authentic and trustworthy because its writing was at the command and under the superintendence of God Himself. More than that, we believe that the Bible, the Old and New Testaments as received by the Hebrew people and the Christian church, the Bible is God's chosen vehicle whereby He continually witnesses to His Son and reveals Himself. We believe that apart from the Scriptures, there is no knowledge of God, and that therefore it behooves us to search its pages and to publish them to the whole world. Yes, we are committed to the proposition that God can be known intellectually. But that is hardly the gospel. And it is hardly all that Paul meant when he said he would lose everything if he could just know him. He was speaking of a second kind of knowledge as well. And we with Paul are committed to its possibility and its propagation. We believe in the experiential knowledge of God and Christ. If correct intellectual knowledge of God, all that were possible, that would be hell of the most exquisite sort. Indeed, this is what Paul speaks of when he points out the incapabilities of the law. Oh, the law, he says. It showed me in the finest detail what God is like, and in so doing, showed me my eternal alienation from Him. I can know Him, but I can never know Him. There is the gospel. It is possible to know God experientially, to have fellowship with Him, to feel that aching void filled and filled and filled. We at Asbury believe this. How is it possible? It is possible through the atoning merit of Jesus Christ's death on Calvary. As I'm not here today to argue theories of inspiration, I'm not here to argue theories of the atonement. But I am here to say that once I was dead, and now I am alive. Once I was lost, and now I am found. Once I was blind, but now I see. How is that possible? It is possible because on the cross, Jesus Christ took my deadness and my lostness and my blindness and made them His own. It is possible because when they nailed Jesus on that cross, they were nailing there a death warrant with my name and yours on the dotted line. He took it with Him when He went into that tomb, but when He rose, He left it there. It is gone. We are reconciled. We can know God. And what must we do to earn this glorious benefit of God's, this experiential knowledge of our Maker? Oh, how long and earnestly John Wesley sought the answer to that question in voluntary abstinences, works of charity, long and earnest study of the Scripture, stern and searching preaching. Yet, it was all dust and ashes when he returned from the mission field at 34 years of age. Then, tracing the footsteps of Luther before him, he discovered that we cannot earn this benefit. We can only lay aside such selfish attempts and trust him to do what he has said. We believe that by faith it is possible that we who were his enemies might be transformed into his sons and daughters. We can know him whom to know aright is life eternal. When we speak of the second facet of Paul's vision of reality and his goal, we come to that area which is perhaps most distinctive in Asbury's identity. Paul said he was willing to lose everything if he might know the power of Christ's resurrection. John Wesley could have saved himself a great deal of trouble if he had kept quiet at this point. But he knew his scriptures too well to keep quiet. He saw that God did not merely want to change man's status from alien to son. He wanted to change his nature from godless to godly. He saw the passages which run from Genesis to Revelation, which declare that God's intent for his children is that they should love God with all their heart, with all their soul, with all their mind, with all their strength, and their neighbor as themselves. And he was fool enough to believe that God has the resources to do that in this life. Paul was that kind of fool also. He said, "I know that as far as the record is concerned, the old enemy Paul is dead and the new son Paul is alive. But that's not enough. I want to experience the power of his resurrection. I want to be dead to what the old Paul did. And I want to be alive to what the new Paul should be." And he recognized that just as the new relationship was not attained by striving, neither was the new nature. Both were the result of a miracle through faith. A song of a few years ago said, "What the world needs now is love, sweet love. That's the only thing there's just too little of." Paul knew that. John Wesley knew that. And the rank and file on the streets today is coming to discover that more and more every day. They are coming to know that deep in the human spirit is something which affluence, education, social and economic planning, technical expertise, etc., etc., cannot cure. It is that basic inability of man to love anyone other than himself and those whom he views as an extension of himself. It is this which threatens to make shipwreck of all of humanity's hopes and dreams. And it is this to which Asbury was raised up to speak. It is possible, nay, imperative, to die to the old godless nature and to have resurrected in one a new godly or godlike nature whose characteristic is love. Call this experience what you will, the fullness of the Spirit, the exchanged life, entire sanctification. Please don't misunderstand me. Correct terminology is important. But much more important to experience its reality and to share it with a world which has lost its way, with a world which is reaching for the stars and is getting East Harlem's. We believe in the power of the resurrection. How thankful I am that Paul did not stop with these two aspects of his commitment and his goal. For if he had, I should wonder about their reality. He says, "I want to know him and the power of his resurrection." But what convinces me that he means these is what follows. "I want to share the fellowship of his sufferings." My friends, you and I are not knowing him. We are not experiencing the power of his resurrection unless there is such a thirst for Christ-likeness in us which drives us to be like him even to wanting to share his sufferings. Paul realized that the world was not redeemed by Jesus Christ parading himself for the oohs and ahs of men. It was not redeemed in a moment of religious ecstasy on the Mount of Transfiguration. It was redeemed in the terrible agony of Calvary, of a man, the God-man, dying to himself in order that the world might be saved. And Paul says, if there was a cross for Jesus Christ in order that the world might be saved, there is a cross for Paul in order that the world might be saved. Lead me to it. Make no mistake, that is not the natural man speaking. The tradition from which Asbury has sprung is the pietistic one. Pietism has come in for some hard blows over the years. Some of them were deserved. At any rate, the word now connotes intense concern with the cultivation of an inner spiritual life at the expense of active participation in the redemption of the world. Wesley saw this tendency creeping into his societies from the Moravian Brethren and railed against it. I believe Paul would have too. But neither Wesley nor Paul made the absurd mistake of suggesting that the means whereby the redemption of the world could be secured was by ignoring the cultivation of an inner personal relationship with God. For only when one has shared that inner fellowship with him and has been conformed to his death within will one seek the fellowship of his suffering without. Yes, Asbury is pietistic, but it is a pietism with feet. Over the years, Asbury and her graduates have manifested a genuine desire to share in the sufferings of Christ, to die to their own desires, their own advancements, their own purposes, in order that the world might be redeemed. We seek to know the fellowship of his sufferings. This is how one man perceives Asbury. She is of one mind. She is committed to the knowledge of Christ, to his resurrection power, to sharing the fellowship of his sufferings. Perhaps I am wrong in this perception. Perhaps I am deluded. I pray God I am not. But this I know. If this is a correct perception, if it is not a delusion, it can only remain true as you commit yourselves to this same vision. For you are now Asbury, and you will either hold her to the mark or you will pull her aside. Therefore, I call upon you this day to commit yourselves, that you will lose everything in order that you may know him, in order that you may know the power of his resurrection, in order that you may know the fellowship of his sufferings. For if you do, Asbury will be true to the heavenly vision. But oh, much more importantly, you will be true to the heavenly vision. Thank you.
I'm sure you join with me in expressing heartfelt thanks to all who have made an excellent contribution to the orientation period this morning. We haven't made elaborate introductions, and we haven't made elaborate comments because of the full schedule, not because they were not deserved. But we do want to say a hearty thank you to all who have made such an excellent contribution to the program.